Last session for GPF today is improvements to IFRS 8 operating segments. And I give the word to Nadia.
Good morning, everyone. I know this is your last session for today and for this week. So during this session, we're going to talk about proposed amendments to IFRS 8 operating segments. First, some background. The board published the exposure draft of the proposed amendment in March of this year, a couple of months ago. As you have seen, the board decided to retain the management approach in IFRS 8. In total, there are 9 amendments, proposed amendments to IFRS 8. All proposals are based on feedback that the board received during its post-implementation review of IFRS 8 a number of years ago. For our discussion today, we decided to choose 4 proposed amendments, which we believe are most relevant for preparers. The proposed amendments that we're going to discuss today are highlighted on slide number 8. COD, link IFRS 8 segments with annual reporting package, clarify criteria for aggregation, and changes in segmentation provide earlier interim information. These are the 4 proposed amendments that we're going to discuss today. If you have comments on any other proposed amendments, we would like to discuss your comments on those amendments after at the end of our session today. And with all this said, we're now going to move on to the proposed amendment number 1, which is described on slide number 10. This proposal deals with identification of Chief Operating Decision Maker, or COGM. And what we did in the exposure draft, we clarified that the COGM function makes operating decisions and decisions about allocating resources to and assessing the performance of the operating segments of an entity. And basically, what we did add, like, in summary, we added more emphasis on the fact that CODM makes operating decisions, which some people would presume were quite obvious from the title of CODM to begin with, but obviously it wasn't that obvious, and therefore the board decided to clarify it. So the question for this forum is, do you think the proposed amendment will help to prepare us to identify the chief operating decision maker?
Kevin?
I think your amendment has the potential to make it worse, not easier, because I think you should define it as the highest decision-making body, which is comprised of executives, because you seem to imply that the board could still participate, but in a lot of the jurisdictions, there's a cap at the board on how many executives can be members, and therefore you end up with non-executives. And if non-executives are supposed to be making strategic decisions, then they are not the one that makes the operating decisions. So I think it's how you find that gap between who makes operating decisions and who makes strategic decisions.
To explain a little bit, maybe we move on back to slide number 8. So this amendment about the chief operating decision maker is not the only amendment. So as you can see from slide number 8, there are 4 amendments that deal with chief operating decision maker. And one of the amendments basically deals with non-executive members and like explains how to deal with them in terms of like, do they actually have any decision making power or not. So
but that's why I say I don't think you're clear. Because, say, if a board under statute, like if I take the South African board,
yeah. We
have to have majority non-executives. And once you're majority non-executives, you do not make operating decisions. You can only make strategic. And therefore, to say that the board, and you ignore the non-voting, it's a contradiction in terms based on the statute. And that's why I think it's... You're effectively ending up one too high. It should be the highest decision-making body that comprises the majority of executives, i.e. the guys who make the operating decisions. Don't confuse it with the guys whose job it is to make strategic decisions. Otherwise, you're going to get back to the board is always again the CODN. And I don't think that's where you want to end up.
But I didn't think we were saying it is strategic decisions, nor would we be saying it has to be the board. We're saying the CODM is the person or group that takes the operating decision. So it could be one layer below the board. It could be the board, but it may not be.
But where I was reading the actual standard, it talks about the board and dealing with non-voting members. Well, if the majority of your board is non-voting,
but then, by definition, it's not the operating maker. Doesn't it say it could be an individual or it could be a group of individuals, it could be the board?
I don't think I'm on the conceptual that it can never be the board if the board is majority non-executive and therefore the board, by definition, only makes strategic decisions. It can never make operating decisions.
Well, that might depend on the jurisdiction.
Yeah, and that's why I say the one size fits all process here doesn't necessarily work,
right?
Because you could end up at the board, and I think that's still the wrong answer.
But Kevin, if you have on page 8, the first, CUDM makes operating decisions. Man, if in South Africa they don't make operating decisions, it could not be the CUDM. Yeah.
Well, that's why I say I think you've got to define it that if the issue we've had is that people are going to the board.
Why? I mean, it's such strong presumption. Why do you presume people go to the board?
Because when I read financial statements, that's who is defined as the operating decision maker.
Is it in South Africa?
No. When I can read this, I can read from a selection around the world, who is your CODM, and it says the board.
But I think it's a very strong generalization, if I may say so, because we did our research during this project, and it's not necessarily the board, you know? And that, I don't think that's the intention of the standard, that it's always the board.
And I think what Kevin is saying is where the board comprises mostly of non-executive directors, we should prohibit that.
Correct. Because
I think Kevin's really disagreeing with what we're saying in here. We haven't got it right, but he just disagrees.
If you've got a majority of non-voting, you, by definition, you can't be an operational maker. It's a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you can clarify it in spaces, saying something like, I don't know.
I'd be interested in what others think about Kevin's position.
Yeah, I can share in my company, the operational decisions are taken by a step below the board. And in my company, its majority is independent directors voting, but independent directors who cannot be made to take operational decisions. So therefore, I mean, the CODM, what Martin was saying, the CODM may or may not include board, depending on the geography and depending on the company. But if we define CODM as the body function which takes decision, I think it encompasses those who are taking operational decisions, and also in a situation where board takes the operational decisions, then the board. I don't find anything wrong in saying that the CODM is a function and not an individual.
Okay.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
Steve? I think I'll just back Kevin up in that I think people can get to the right answer and should get to the right answer, which in that case wouldn't be the board, but it's too easy for people to look to the board in the first instance. So therefore additional guidance would be helpful.
And why did they get to it being the board incorrectly at the moment?
I think that some confuse making the decisions to being responsible for the decisions. So therefore, it may not be the board who are making the decisions, but they do make some decisions which then has an impact on operating, but they are responsible for the decisions. I think it's too easy for people to end up going to that level.
Yeah. It's a function of the executive go to the board to get ratification of the executive decision, in my view, whereas others go to the board to get approval to do it. So therefore, if they get approval to do it, then they're making the allocation. But they're not. They're following a staff paper.
I sort of saw the confusion could possibly arise between the difference between having a governance discussion about how the decision was made and the process behind the decision, as opposed to being responsible for the decision. And that's where the confusion arose, especially where you had a mixture of executive and non-executives.
I don't remember, because this is a standard that I don't frequently read on all occasions. How do we define operating decisions? Is it clearly defined? Because today we have a situation in which some decisions can be made by an officer, depending on the scale of the consequences of these decisions. You might have to share this decision with other officers, and eventually all the officers might have to decide together about something depending on the relevance of the decision. So I don't remember if there is a definition of operating decision, but might be necessary if we do not have a clear one, what exactly would be the operating decisions that would count to identify who is the chief operating decision maker.
Well, the way it's defined in here is the function is the one that makes the operating decisions and decisions about allocating resources to and assessing the performance of the operating segments. So it's clearly saying it's a function, and those are the decisions that are made. And I guess you start with the company as a whole and look downwards rather than the way you just described.
The allocation of resources depends. Allocation with lower relevant, probably one officer would make these decisions. More relevant allocations, you would need two officers. Really big, relevant allocations, you would need the entire group of officers. So
you
how
might
can I
need the whole board?
Yeah.
But isn't the allocation of resource decision is allocating to the operating segments?
Yes.
Now within the operating segment, to probably have more latitude on who's making those decisions, but the overall allocation to, you know, how much money goes to each segment is you know,
no, actually, within this
probably
segment,
a broader group.
We now have a situation that requirements to improve internal control. So within the segment, the officer doesn't have autonomy to make too big decision, so he needs to have sharing to have to share this decision with other officers, even though being within his own segment.
Yeah.
So that's a change we had recently in the internal controls structure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if because I haven't analyzed how this change could somehow affect if the chief operating decision maker is not anymore the one we thought it was.
Mm.
But it's just an idea that depending on how this how this is structured, I don't know if I might have some trouble trying to apply this, trying to identify the chief operating decision maker.
You've got to remember it's the chief, not any operating decision maker.
And Sandra's clarification was very helpful. That's exactly what the intention of the standard is. So it's not the operating decision making within the segment. It's the location at the higher level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Since it's the last point, I perhaps haven't done my homework very well, but I'm waking up to it now. I mean, I fully agree that it, in many cases, should not be the board of directors. It should be sort of an executive committee that we're trying to tackle here. But you know, I think even in you know, it's actually typically a responsibility of the board to approve budgets proposed by lower down management. So if the board, even the board, including many non-executive people, totally non-executive people, are approving budgets, aren't they actually then somehow responsible? I mean, they're not responsible for the operating decisions, but they're responsible for some of these other things like the resource allocation. So
that's the tension.
I think I'm waking up to Kevin's point. that you're throwing a lot in this sentence here about Operino. You've got in one function, the function that makes operating decisions, and then also makes decisions about allocating resources. Now, if it's in many jurisdictions, the only people that can actually decide resource allocation is the board. So, I think I'm agreeing with Kevin. The more I think about it, you are assuming a body here that with certain functions, you're assuming that only one body has those functions, and in fact, it might be that those functions get split. Either because the resource allocation, the allocation to different divisions, etc., is a very strategic and typically board level decision. Am I correct?
I think it is quite possible in theory that there are two bodies whom fulfill the role of the chief operating decision maker. So it doesn't need to be just one.
But you write here the function is the one that makes but you're assuming that they're all in one function. And actually, the more I think about it, I'm not sure that's true.
But do we confuse who's responsible for making the decision and who approves the decision? So if something goes wrong, I think, if I look at the structure in Germany, where we have supervisory boards, clearly they approve the budget which is set by the board, but if something goes wrong, responsible for this maybe wrong allocation or thing, I think is the board, it's not the supervisory board. So I think approving a kind of decision or approving a budget is for me not just making this operational decision of resource allocation. Maybe it's different in other jurisdictions, but I think that is...
But it's a fundamental board decision whether or not they want to make a big investment in this division.
I agree. In many jurisdictions, it's a board decision. Yeah, but in Kevin's, maybe not because
no,
he's there.
No, it's a board decision.
And I think you need. I look at this, and I haven't looked until now, I think you put too much into this.
It's a use of language. Are they making the decision or are they ratifying the decision?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I believe the board ratify the decision. It's that group below that make the decision. Because the board says yes or no. But if management don't propose it, board don't think about it.
We all produce strategic plans. Who do we produce strategic plans for?
The board.
We produce strategic plans for the board.
They're strategic decision makers.
And that's the strategic resource allocation. It's the board that decides the corporate structure. It's the board that... It's not the CEO that decides how to structure the organization, it's the board that...
I think that we have to be careful about how we're defining what the board does. I think in different jurisdictions, it is different. And you can't generalize that the board is the one that's making some of these decisions. It's going to be driven by the jurisdiction.
Thanks, Wes.
Yeah, listening to the discussion, I was wondering whether it would help and fit various jurisdiction situation if you were mentioning that the function, whether it's an individual or a group, has to be the ultimate responsibility for the operating decisions, and that this function may or may not be also making the decisions around the allocation of resources. Would that fit?
I want my ideal world. I'm back to where I was, that the function, the individual or group, must comprise majority non-strategic decision makers.
So I think that's what attention is, isn't it? So I can see an example where you've got the board who agree the budgets and not only just approve them but go back and interact on those budgets. They agree strategic plans, strategic allocation of resources, but also could agree the significant bids. There could be a process where that needs authority from the board and other very significant capex expenditures and so on. And that board could be primarily non-execs. So that's the tension that needs to be worked through to give that clear guidance on what takes priority in that situation.
Okay. So it sounds like we
need to do some thinking.
some clarification.
At least we have got some input, right?
Absolutely. And we might need to get back to Kevin, for example, to clarify a couple of points.
I've got the South African comment letter on my laptop, but I haven't read it yet. So.
Thank you. So, can we move to the next one? Okay. The next one is proposed amendment number 5, that's on slide number 12, and it deals with link of operating segments within the annual reporting package. And we're probably all familiar with situations when companies have several operating segments reported in the first half of the annual report and management commentary, and then you go to the financial statements and there is only one reporting segment, so the whole entity is just one operating segment. And this discrepancy was noticed during our post-implementation review, and people said that fact that the segments differ in different parts of our company's communications. People were concerned about the situation, and they asked the board to do something about it. So what the board proposed to do is to require companies to explain if there is such difference in the reportable segments and entities' financial statements and its other communications. Explain why do you have different number of segments. Why, for example, you have one segment in the financial statement and 5 segments in the annual report someplace else. So, that's what this proposal is about, to require entities to explain this difference, if such difference is.
I tend to disagree with the idea of requiring an explanation within the financial statements of something that's not in the financial statements. I also imagine what would happen if, for instance, we have an annual report that we have to file in Brazil. We also file an annual report in the US. And supposing, hypothetically, that we provide an information in Brazil that is different from what we provide in the 20F in the US, then I would have to explain to the investor in the US that I am providing something different in the financial statement, that I'm providing something different in an annual report in Brazil. So that's something I don't know if I got it right from this proposal, but.
But why do you object this? Like, is it difficult to do? Like, why do you object? And since you object, what's your reason for that?
I'm very subjective. I just don't like the idea of having to explain within the financial statements something that is not related to the financial statements, but something that I have done on another financial report and has.
But the whole, just to explain a little bit of thinking behind the proposal, the whole IFRS 8 and segment disclosures are based on the management approach. In other words, through like segments are identified and reported through the eyes of management. So one, like, you know, the external use of financial information would presume that the eyes of management always do the same thing, i.e. in the financial statements and outside of the financial statements, the same eyes and see the same thing. So
then I would have to explain, for instance, that a local requirement of the regulator tells me that I have to do something different from what management uses, which is disclosed in the segments in the financial statements. So.
But why would
I don't think.
And we have not said in regulatory packages. We have said in your usual annual reporting package. So it is different if a regulator more in a country requires you something different. That is not what we are trying to have.
So where I've got the same tension that Marilla has, and it's these other words at about the same time. So we will publish our South African annual report, and we also publish our 20F at the same time. I think you're trying, as we were trying to discuss yesterday, this PDF document. So if you sort of change, I think around the table I'd like to believe that we all know what the words annual report means. So instead of this annual reporting package, because that can cover the 20th, it could cover an integrated report, it can cover sustainability. That's an annual reporting package.
Okay.
Where if you say which the entity designates its annual report, I think then his tension with the 20F, my tension with the 20F gets resolved, because I know what my annual report is.
It's a very good point, Kevin. Sorry to interrupt, because I think in slide number 16, we actually split the discussion into two parts. Like, do you agree with the intention to reconcile in the first place, which is question yes. number two? And then the reporting package is a separate question.
Yes.
Like, how far can we go in...
Correct. If my annual report is different to my segments, woe behind me. It shouldn't be. Absolutely. But I might have an intent to do a specific outreach to investors in Australia. So I might disaggregate my Australian segment to a greater detail. I don't think you're intending that, because that's not part of my annual report, but it could be part of my annual reporting package because it's published at approximately the same time.
Can I just step back for a second? But what about the requirement itself, the requirement to reconcile the second? So, like,
I think
just
that's right.
Okay, fine. Just to make clear.
As long as we're talking about the annual report, the PDF document that Stephen and I were debating yesterday.
Yeah, but only one comment, because I think the main problem is not that we have divergence between management report and financials. It is often that if you present your annual numbers in analyst presentations and press releases, that people using a different kind of splitting of segments, and we want to cover that. Because I think that is what we heard from the post-implementation review, that is where the main problem is, that people using analyst presentation, press releases, and then have a different split. It is not that they usually do it between management report and annual financial statements. They're in drum.
Yeah, my point is that if I'm compliant with IFRS 8 and I've made some disclosure of on segments, the different report what you are referring to has been mentioned in another part of the annual report. I consider that as non-IFRS information. Now, non-IFRS information disclosed somewhere else. Why should it be the responsibility of the IASB to ensure that there is a reconciliation or there is an explanation? Now, I mean, this kind of disclosure may be required for multiple reasons, maybe regulatory requirement, maybe many other reasons, but those are basically non-IFRS information. And then whether the local authorities or the regulators, respective regulators, would take the responsibility of for this reconciliation or IFRS. I believe that as long as in the financial statements, as long as I have followed IFRS, it is not the responsibility of IFRS to monitor the reconciliation.
I think the concern is that many investors think that companies aren't following IFRS. And that's indicated by the fact that you've got these additional disclosures in the management commentary, and they're saying, well, if that's there, surely senior management are managing the business on the basis of that, so why isn't it in the segments?
That's a valid question.
But then,
and I've visited a company.
No, but then would you like to address that through begging in changes in IFRS 8?
Well,
that the right action or something else?
We are, in the sense of proposing the clarification of the CODM, but this is part of that package to try and ensure that... So I went to this company, and in the front section, they clearly, to my mind, have four segments, because they talk about the retail, the business, and the two different types of business, and maybe there's three. But actually, the whole company, the entity, is only one segment. In terms of segment reporting, and I just think they're wrong, and I think they're justifying it by saying, oh, the board of directors is only getting the consolidated information, but I think in reality the executive people are getting more than that, and you kind of get that, the hint within the front section of the report, because they talk about the growth in the retail and the growth in the business and the growth in this part of the business and that part of the business. It seems obvious that there are three segments.
There may not be a contradiction, so to say. I'll give an example. Say, let's say something very important like digital is taking a shape. So in the beginning, we were not reporting separately, but we could anticipate that it is important. The analysts are wanting to know what I'm doing on digital. It is subsumed in the others category. Now in the MD&A, I speak more about digital. There is no contradiction between the between what I have stated in the financial statement.
That's fine. And we're not saying that it has to coincide. We're saying give an explanation as to why that hasn't been reported as a separate section.
And that explanation will be in the financial statement or in the MD&A. That is another question which arises.
The financial statement.
In the financial statement.
So you'd say other, including digital, comprising less than 4% of the other group. And that might be sufficient.
Sandra?
When you look at the... I think it would be helpful, instead of defining the annual reporting package like you do here, is make a statement that the expectation is that you would consistently report the same segments within your external reporting, and theoretically it should be the same thing that is consistent with your internal reporting. But I don't think you have to define your annual reporting package to include all of these. I think all, regardless of when the press release comes out or the investor meeting occurs, there should be a consistency amongst the documents. The other thing that I wanted to point out, just to make sure that there's still flexibility, if there's some particular area that you may want to highlight one year and you do a special study and included an investor package, it doesn't necessarily drive back that that needs to be a new segment.
Malcolm?
Yeah, I'm on the page of Murillo, and I think what Sandra just said. First of all, point of Murillo, by putting a reference to something outside the financial, what you're doing in the rest of the annual report in the financial statement, means that actually the financial statements no longer become a standalone document. And okay, we've had a bit of that discussion yesterday, but I still feel it's irrelevant putting in a financial statement what's happening in the rest of the reporting package. The comment, but you know, I see your challenge. But the place that it needs to really be explained, although you cannot necessarily give guidance on it, the place that it needs to be explained is actually in the rest of the annual report, why they are reporting additional segments or reporting slightly differently to what's in the back in the financial statement. And then, you know, it could well be what is being reported on. I mean, Stephen, you talked about perhaps sales being reported. Well, just reporting sales in a sort of franchise or whatever within the segment doesn't necessarily mean it's the segment reporting. It's just highlighting a subdivision within that segment. So I think people, you know, I fully agree. You should, exactly with what Sandra said, you should strongly encourage that they are aligned. But I also strongly agree with Murillo that there should not be that firm requirement to look at what's in the rest of the document and make a statement about the rest of the document. It's irrelevant to the standalone financial statement. So I'm not so keen on what you're proposing as it's currently.
What is your reason? I understand that you don't like putting an explanation in the financial statement, but and you're saying it's not relevant, which I think personally it's a little bit of a strong statement, because we've had lots of feedback that people do struggle with differences.
Well, I understand, but that might be that with respect that you, as I say, users are focusing on a subdivision of the segment, but it might be that is not, as I say, just focusing on sales, but not the full segment result. I mean, a requirement in formal segment reporting that's not just, say, focused on sales.
But that is not what we're proposing. It is, what we're proposing is also, and I think it is not out of the range of financial statements. It is said because our segment requirements how to split segments is based on how the management looks at the business, steers a business, and manages the business.
So the place.
And I think it is then to explain if they communicate outside their company, okay, about the performance of their business in a different split. A reader of the annual financial statement should at least understand why, and that is our requirement. And that was also, I think, in the peer for many users, said, okay, we don't understand it. We don't understand because the requirements is you should report how companies looking at their business, steering it, and then, okay, but often it is then in different packages done a different way. There could be reasons for that. I totally agree with it. But so then they should explain.
I think the place for that comment is in the non-mandatory management discussion document. There you should have a very firm statement. There should be an explanation.
But we cannot make requirements for that.
Well,
we
can. But that is the place to put it.
I have one more point. You know, just today, I mean, at the time of audit, it is the responsibility of the auditor to see that I adhere to IFRS. As you rightly said, yeah. If the auditor is seeing that this is not the way I'm looking, really looking at the business, so why is he accepting that?
It's management's responsibility to comply with.
No. I'm saying, I agree it's management responsibility.
Can you just clarify something? Like during the feedback, and people mentioned regulators who should be doing that and auditors who should be doing that. But during the PIR, the matter of fact is all these people, including regulators and auditors and users, came back to the ASB asking for help because they're struggling. And we can point fingers who should be doing what, but ultimately the ASB, and I know it's not a straightforward proposal, it's a brave proposal, but the ASB decided to take the lead and do something about it.
Yes,
so, and that's where we are.
Okay, give us a word to Doug first.
So I agree with where you're headed. So I like the statements and your reporting should be aligned. I like Sandra's recommendation, though. If you get too specific, you're going to pull in things you're not intended to pull in. And what I think you're hearing frustration on, I actually don't think some of the users understand what a segment really is. Mm-hmm. So part of the push you're getting is they want more segments. That's really what they want. Mm-hmm. And it's got nothing to do with this reporting package. They just want more information to do a different type of analysis. But when you do a definition like this, the part that stood out to me even was regulatory, being we have a CRTC, which is a regulates wireless and telecom. They asked for product reporting to go to them, which could make it public, but I don't have a segment on products. I have a segment on a cash generating unit. So by defining it this narrowly, you're going to pull in things that mean I could have 100 segments of which I'll have a revenue line and everything else is allocated. So how do we just make sure, because our auditors will interpret it that way. So how do we just make sure we don't pull in, like Sandra's suggestion of, should be aligned, and here's indicators of alignment, something like that. But the moment you make it, it is and must, and not a may or should represent, it puts us in a box that gets undesirable outcomes for everyone.
Steve?
I think related to the annual report, as we would all normally understand it, I think you should be presenting information in the front which is consistent with that in the back. And if you're not, then you should be explaining why. So absolutely with you on that. But this also seems to capture the presentation that would be made at the same time. And quite often that presentation is drawing out information in a different way, presenting additional information to help the investors. Just to give that some flavour, so you could be managing your business with primary reference to your budget or your forecasts for the current year. That's the way you're managing your business. But actually, you realise that the investors haven't got that information available. So therefore, what you need to do is you need to really bridge from the previous year. So you strip out acquisitions and you might strip out FX in order for them to understand things on a progressive basis. To then need to make reference in your financial statements as to what you're doing in your presentation feels very odd when it's for a different purpose.
I don't think we're recommending that though. This is all about which segments, not is it constant currency.
Yeah, so
not.
If you strip out an acquisition, then are you then creating another segment of that acquired business? Because you might be stripping, you know, so you're presenting what is your IFRS 8 segment of a particular sector, and you say, actually, if you split that in two,
yeah, so the contribution from the new business
organic,
is this and the existing.
Yeah,
that's fine, and that's
That's not what we're trying to capture here.
I read it as capturing that, so, okay.
Lydia?
I would recommend to write it in another way, to say that you ask preparers to ask themselves if there is any question about the right level of IFRS 8 reporting in the notes, so that they can, I would say, justify to the auditors that there is no subject, that they have the right presentation. So, because I believe that ISB is not a regulator, is not an auditor. So the point is, you decide to say IFRS 8 is the level of management segment you are dealing in the groups, that has to be respect, but you have just to say you shall respect that, and be aware that if you are giving other information elsewhere, you have to justify to your auditors that this is not making a subject about the level you report in the notes.
Richard?
This is a very specific issue, but private companies can also report under IFRS, and we're one of them. And we don't have to provide a segment note, but if we do provide a segment note, we have to comply with this standard. So the definition of an entity annual reporting package as something which is publicly available is a problem. I don't have anything that's publicly available. So I think you need to have a separate paragraph dealing with separating that 19B refers to public companies, and there has to be something that deals with private companies. And the other comment I have was that how an entity's operations are reported to the chief operating decision maker. Well, we slice and dice results any way they want it. So I think you have to put something in there, a primary way or a most consistent way or something like that, because it doesn't really reflect the facts.
Sandra?
Yes, instead of referencing within the financial statements disclosures outside of the financial statements, I think it would be preferable to recommend that the preparers appropriately address that in the other documents. It's very uncomfortable to reference something outside of your financial statements within your financial statements. They should always stand on their own. And you know, even internally in presentations we do, we never reference something external. It should always stand on its own.
Don't understand. Why do you reference? We don't reference. You say only what you have.
It's only the document you're looking at. You shouldn't have to go and say, by the way, in our investor presentation, we broke this out and why. In the investor presentation, I think if you're doing something other than segment reporting, it should be recommended that you explain why.
And become auditable also.
I'm sorry?
That becomes auditable also.
No, because it's not covered in the audit opinion.
Right.
Maybe, but
and
then...
We can't always, or we shouldn't, have the auditors be the gatekeeper. It is up to the preparers to make sure that they're complying and doing the presentation appropriately and making the right judgments. So to keep referencing the auditors is uncomfortable.
And the one who challenge that is the regulator. So I believe that ISB is not the regulator. Even if the users complains to you, this is not your
regulator's complaint.
This is a responsibility. But I'm sure everyone should do its job.
Yeah, but we are not saying you cannot do it. We only say if you're doing that, explain it to me why you're doing it.
For example, the regulator may ask to prepare us to give some explanation in the other documents where they report something else than the segment in IFRS 8. But this is the job of the regulator to ask for it, and the explanation should be given in the other documents.
Okay.
I don't see the problem.
I don't get it, really, because we don't regulate it. And we're giving a disclosure. We're asking for a disclosure. Nothing, we're doing it 1,000 times in our disclose. If you have done that, disclose it. If you have market risk, disclose it. If you have shown it in a different, in your press release, show it. What is that? It's not a kind of out of our scope. We always require a little bit of disclosure if we think it is helpful for users. And users have asked us, we don't understand it, why they do it a different way, because, and then we, mind clearly, it should give a little bit of discipline. But it is not a kind of regulation, what the regulator thinks, do you have to stick to our rules? It is an explanation why entities think, okay, they have done a different split of their segments in other documents close to the annual package instead of the financial statements. And that is a little bit odd, because we're requiring management, because if you're steering that, so why they give different information outside? That is helpful for a user. That is our job. We're giving...
So let me take my mining example. My regulator insists that I prepare reserves and resources per mine. But per mine are not my segments.
Yeah.
So I have, for the reserves and resource book, published as part of my annual reporting package, actually the same day as the annual financial statements.
Yeah, but good
so
reserves.
Must I now change my segment reporting to say, reconcile it back that if my each mine... This is how it would be. And that's where these words are giving this implication. It might not be the intention, it's giving the implication.
But that is not a good example, because we are not speaking reserves, we're giving segment reporting, and segment reporting is a little bit of performance. And if the regulator would ask you to give performance measure by a mine, that maybe is also interesting, but then you can explain in your annual statement saying, okay, that is because it is a regulatory requirement given by the mine. Is that an issue?
Well, a sentence is better than a reconciliation.
We're not asking for a reconciliation.
The only thing you should explain why you're giving that more detailed or whatever split. Morillo.
It can be done. But it feels wrong. That's a problem. It's a matter of primacy. So it makes more sense to have something outside the financial statements making reference to the financial statements, and the financial statements making reference to something outside of it. And there's something with the wording here that I'm not sure if it's right, because it says that you need to explain the difference between the reportable segment in the financial statements with some. When compared to a segment identified outside the financial statements. So, but the reportable segment is something that we define after a process that we need to run to identify who is the CDOM and what is the information that he receives. And so there is a full set of things that needs to be done. But what is a segment identifying in other parts of entities' annual reporting package. I don't know what that is. And I've seen examples here of the other GPF members that they have disaggregated information, but are these segments? We don't know what are segments outside the finished segments. It's not defined. So I don't know with what should I relate the segmented information in the finished segments.
I can see what you're saying about the wording, because you haven't defined segments outside. What you're saying is, so if you take the example you gave of the mines, it's really where you haven't reported the same segments outside the financial statements. Now, that's a wording problem, I think.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's narrative. It's not an issue.
And can I ask one more question?
Continue.
So if you took since you said continue, I'm going to ask two questions. So if you took the mine situation, that you could you not disclose these mines are part of this segment and these mines are part of that segment? I think that's all that we were trying to say here, I think. And would that be a big problem? And then I have another question as well, which is a lot of you are concerned about regulatory reports. So if we were to think about, is there a difference between... Because I thought what we were trying to get at was where investors were finding it difficult to struggle things like the prelim or the investor presentation to the annual report. and not, I hadn't really thought, and I came to this project late, so I only just picked it up. So I hadn't thought that we were extending to regulatory reports. And I guess
that's
I'd be interested.
That's your definition, though. That's why we read it that way.
Yeah, I can see it now.
I have no problem with the investor reports. Like, we can all do that. I think that's fine. It's just the way of even press releases.
Yeah.
We do marketing press releases that say we're going to build in this province, as an example. So does that mean my province is now a segment when I'm only talking about doing a capital build there to get political fanfare? That's the thing. So press releases. So it's all got to be related to the results. And it's all got to be just a little bit more general, and I think I'm good. I think that's the right way to go. So just don't
narrow
make it
your
so
definition.
Specific.
Yeah.
Not so specific.
Yeah, we'll consider the regulatory report. Yeah.
Okay, last comment for this question, Malcolm?
I don't really see the existing problem that we've got, because the purpose of the management and discussion is to provide more management and discussion analysis of the results. If that means, and I'm totally on Doug's page here, if that means that you're giving a bit more product level information or channel information, retail against wholesale or God knows what, that doesn't mean it's a segment. You're doing exactly what the MD&A is requiring to do, is to discuss why the results of the segment are what they are. It doesn't mean that you've got actually more segment people.
But I think that's what this is getting at. If you took, you had a whole part of your MD&A that said, look, we've invented this amazing new product and it does all these whiz-bangy things and it's, you know, and it's made this much contribution, but then I couldn't work out which segment that whiz-bangy product was in. I think that's all that this is trying to get at, that I can look at my segments and say, yeah, this is going somewhere because they've got this new product. So it's only that what we're trying to get at, I think. Let's move on.
Okay, we have heard that it could create some problems.
So one last question. Will it be minuted that the preparers have agreed or have not agreed?
Wait and see.
Well, it's important. It's important for us to know. How will it be minuted?
Pardon?
How will it be minuted? We have agreed or we have not agreed?
I think we've got to go away and do some thinking. No, we don't want to vote. We'll just go away and do some thinking.
From our side, we have not agreed.
No, I think we have got really helpful input that it could cause problems and that we will take it.
We will take it away.
Yeah, okay, go with the next.
Yeah, we also talk to users as well, what they think about this proposal. So, moving on to slide number 17, proposed amendment 6. Clarify criteria for aggregating operating segments. So I know there is a little bit of similarity with the previous proposed amendment, but this amendment deals only with financial statements, so that we're clear, yeah? It doesn't deal with any information outside of the financial statements. We all know companies have their operating segments, and then IFRS 8 currently allows entities to aggregate operating segments into reportable segments. And this has been an issue currently as well, based on our feedback during the post-implementation review, in the sense that entities aggregate too much. So they might have, like as I said, 5 operating segments and might end up with only again 1 operating reportable segment in the financial statements, and that was the issue. So the way we tackled it, we looked at the criteria which is currently in paragraph 12 of IFRS 8, and we made some changes to that criteria. And we specifically focused on similar economic characteristics. At the moment, IFRS 8 provides only one example of similar economic characteristic, and the board decided that it wasn't sufficient and there should be several of them, so that several of those characteristics should be similar for an entity to be able to aggregate its operating segments into reportable segments. So you can see our proposals on slide number 19. And the question is on slide number 20, do you think the proposed amendment will assist preparers when aggregating operating segments?
Can I ask for a clarification?
Yes.
Are you saying that the operating segments have been defined according to Chief Operating Decision Maker and you've got those segments, and then there's a choice to aggregate two of those.
That's correct. That's okay.
I was wondering if you could maybe insert the word material in here. So two or more material operating segments, and again, just I know everything has materially concept to it, but sometimes the big four don't interpret it that way. And I just don't want to have immaterial segments that actually add no value to our investments or readers.
I don't think we should do that because we'd have to do it throughout the whole book.
Yeah,
we started in one place. Where do we stop?
How do you then get around the fact that you could have very significant amount of segments? Because if and only if is very definitive. It's black and white. And
materiality is pervasive concept applied throughout the whole book.
Okay. This is sort of getting to that should and shall and if and only if.
Maybe it's just the if and only if that's bothering me. Again, it's back to it's very black and white. And we have, I don't know how many audit partners throughout the world, but each one could interpret slightly differently.
We could insert in thousands of sentences
in the book, that's fair.
The word material.
So delete and only if.
Right.
Delete and only if. So if it's single operator, if aggregation system segments and not only if.
Yeah.
Olivia.
Again, something. The fact that it is if and only if restricted the view of the management, because if the management is not exactly cutting things like that. It means that it should cut it at that to be able to present the segments like you say. So I think that it is not right. But I take an example. We sell some cars via internet, but our segment reporting is not separating internet from dealers. So the fact that the method for selling the product is different is not a major problem. On our way we manage our business. So I think that it is not fair to say it has to be if and only if you do this and this and this, this is a segment.
Okay, thanks. Then going to the last question, which I think is an easy one because we're all doing it already.
Okay, we're moving on quickly. So slide number 21, changes in segmentation provide alien interim information. And basically this deals with situations when entities change their segments, the structure of their segments, as compared to, let's say, last year for some valid reasons. You know, business change, the five, something. So there has been a change. Instead of, let's say, four segments, we now have six. This amendment is not to IFRS 8, this amendment is to IS 34 that deals with interim financial reporting. And as you probably know, which I'm sure you do know, in IS 34 currently requires to provide one set of restated interim information when there has been a change in reportable segments. And what this proposes is that entities would provide not only one set of restated information when there has been a change in segmentation, but trend of restated information for the interim period before and after that.
Not just the annual, but the
interim.
Makes sense.
That is why I said I think this comes practice if you change segments you provide the last 7 quarters or whatever. That's good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kevin asked if you would stay for another 15 minutes for a private session.